You know what I want? I want somebody to count me in. That's what I want. I want a three, then you got to do the silent two and the silent one and then point.
Actually, it starts at a silent three, usually.
So do you say right, four?
You know, here, I'll give you a silent count in.
Okay. That's perfect. That's absolutely perfect. I love it. But the first thing I want our listeners to do is I'm going to silent count them. No, that won't work. Okay. The first thing I want our listeners to do is go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/gunshowpodcast. Like us, share us, tell all your friends. Go to your iTunes and subscribe. Go to your friends' iTunes and subscribe.
Mm-hmm. If you if you're an Android listener or your friends are Android users, then you can send them to Stitcher.
Well, if they're Android users, you can go and just sign them up, right, for iTunes, can't you? So they won't know.
Yeah, but I don't. They won't be able to access it. We want people to listen. We want to get the.
I thought we just needed the numbers. Out. We want the message out. Oh, that's an interesting idea.
We do.
I don't think that's how Instagram works, is it?
I don't think that's how Snapchat works.
You just want views?
Yeah. I mean, you want likes on Instagram.
Oh, likes on Instagram.
And
I thought
Facebook.
That was Facebook.
You want shares.
Oh, both.
And, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You can't share on Instagram, but, you know.
Some people share too much on Instagram. Yeah. It's my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's jump in with Ruger's Precision Rifle. Apparently, it is a big hit.
Well, you know, when Ruger announced the Ruger Precision Rifle, it was immediately popular. There was a lot of buzz about it, but there's a lot of buzz about lots of brand name big guns that come out, right? Ruger, there was a lot of buzz about the Ruger American handgun. There was a lot of buzz about, the Smith & Wesson Victory, right? But the one thing I noticed was the Ruger American rifles, or the Ruger Precision rifles, wow, were sold out in 6.5 Creedmoor, and they're still kind of hard to find. But the 308 version is starting to trickle around, starting to pop up here or there on different websites, and I've seen them in the stores and things like that. So they are available. One of the things that really grabbed my attention was Timney announced. Timney is a renowned trigger company. If you hadn't heard of Timney, you probably don't know much about firearm triggers. But they're a renowned aftermarket trigger company. They make really nice triggers, and they announced that they're going to have an application for the Ruger Precision Rifle. And that got me to thinking, well, I know you could buy barrels for the Ruger Precision Rifle. I know you can buy things like you can replace the plastic bolt cover, I think it's called, with a cool engraved one. And I know more than one company is offering replacement handguards. So I thought, well, let me look into this further. And it just occurred to me that this is a very popular rifle. Now it has a popular aftermarket support, I guess is what I'm trying to say, which is one of the key indicators to me that a rifle is going to be, one, here to stay, and two, it's
a
going to be
deal.
Yeah, it's going to, people are going to have it. It's going to be around for a minute. I wouldn't be surprised if it came out in more chamberings than
so
just 308 and 6.5 Creedmoor.
And the
right?
Ruger Precision Rifle is a bolt action rifle like a Remington 700.
It's basically the Ruger American rifle in a precision chassis. Which leads me to the other part of the what I noticed here in the industry is if the greatest form of flattery is imitation, let's see. I think Howa, Savage,
Weatherby, Mossberg.
Right? Mossberg, I think, had theirs first, so I don't know if it's imitation, but let's just go with that.
And Bagara USA?
Among others, have a rifle that comes in a chassis that they're selling to the public. And what that's telling me is the public wants chassis bolt-action rifles. And the Ruger is probably the most popular of the bunch. And I just thought that was interesting, and I was wondering why it was. And it makes sense, right? Because you've got a bolt gun. Everybody knows what kind of accuracy bolt guns can give you, you know, bring to the fight or bring to the hunt or the range or whatever you're doing. And then you've got the ergonomics of, say, for lack of a better reason, the M16 platform, right? You got stocks and
Stocked with pistol grips.
Yes, and, yes. Yeah. And all these chassis systems allow for a detachable magazine system, which everybody likes a detachable magazine. Right. And then, you know, it makes it easy to put bipods and things on them. Scopes have always been easy. We kind of figured out scopes on bolt guns, so meh, you know, it doesn't give you much there.
Well, and that's also usually in the receiver.
Right, yeah, and it's still that way with most of these chassis
there
systems.
You know, you just pretty much everything you used to look at and go, "Is that drilled and tapped?" And then you come, and now it's just like, "Oh yeah, that's drilled and tapped."
Yeah,
like it's a guarantee.
Lots of rifle. My rifle, my bolt gun came with a EGW base on it.
What is an EGW base?
It's that's just a brand name.
Okay, EGW. Yeah, mine came with two Picatinny.
Yeah.
Well,
things.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was gonna say two Picatinny. I don't want to be confusing with it, but it was
a two-piece
Picatinny.
Base.
Yeah,
a two-piece slotted base. Yes, very popular. Lots of things are shipping with those things, and now, like I said, the next step is. I don't know if you remember, but in my day and age, up until right about now, there wasn't a lot of choices if you wanted a good stock and a good bolt gun. You kind of. We're stuck with a crappy synthetic stock or maybe a pretty wooden one that you didn't want to
bang up or take out.
Yeah. And wasn't the right ergonomics for, say, distance shooting, you know, tactical precision shooting or, you know, long distance, cool prone stuff. You know, the hunting Monte Carlo stock doesn't lend itself very well to that most of the time.
Well, and there's also been such an influx in shooters that you've kind of had to create something that everyone is, or a lot more people have the potential of enjoying. If only 50%, let's just say 50% like Monte Carlo stocks.
Sure.
But you've got, you know, another 20% of the market that like, you know, a skeletonized stock and another 20% that like an all wooden stock or, you know, not the non Monte Carlo, just like the smooth side without the cheek riser and all that. You've got to start being adaptable to all of these new shooters coming into our sport.
Well, yeah, to pile on your point there, the best-selling rifle in America is the AR-15 right now, right? And these guns basically take a bolt gun and they put an AR-15 grip on an AR-15-esque stock on it. Maybe not an AR-15 stock, but a lot of these chassis systems allow you to put an AR-15 stock on there. One of the earliest versions of this I remember was the Troy MCS. Do you remember that? The modular chassis system for the M14s? My guard unit got a hold of one of these chassis systems, dropped an M14 in it, and made a sniper rifle. The M16 stock, M16 pistol grip, put a regular sniper scope on it. I think it was M3 Alphas or whatever it was. And went out and actually shot these things, and they shot very, very well, especially compared to the M14 without the chassis system.
Well, I mean, look at... if you think about what is one of the best stocks out there for a long-range platform in the AR, it's a PRS.
Yeah, the PRS.
And if you get a stock system that allows you to put a PRS on it, I think a lot of people would be really happy about that.
Well, and you know how expensive a traditional tactical bolt-action stock is with the modularity built in of the Magpul PRS? The Magpul PRS runs about $200 and some odd.
I think it's like $250.
Yeah, between $200 and $250, depending on where you buy it, right? So the new one's going to be even cheaper, right? The 3?
I don't know.
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait. But... you know, a stock with that kind of adaptability, they're like $1,500. I don't know. They're at least $900 for the adjustable stuff built into a decent tactical stock. It's expensive. And on top of that, you probably, I don't know, do you get those things? Yeah, I guess you probably don't get those things bedded nowadays. They probably come with the modular bedding systems built into those tactical stocks.
Right. Yeah, and you said that, and there's a guy that I know just recently, he purchased a rifle that he said was insanely inaccurate.
Yeah.
And he did the bedding himself, and now he's really pleased with it. So
yeah, so
but that's a
matter.
Lot of work, but that takes skill, and that's a trade craft, really. That's not something that you go and on, you're just kind of like the every 3 weekend or every other month shooter, and you're like, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and bed my rifle.
I wouldn't try it with anything that anything that had a lot of monetary value. You know what I mean? If I had like an inexpensive, you know, Howa or a Remington 700 that wasn't shooting, and I was like, let me see if I can bet it. You know, because the worst comes to worst, you've ruined a $100 stock, you know, or you know, you're not gonna ruin the action by betting it. So the worst comes to worst, you gotta throw away $100 stock, or you gotta go buy another factory stock, you know.
Right.
And that's what we've been talking about. Most of those factory stocks on those guns are quite terrible. In
and
the big scheme
and they're
of
not
things.
Cheap.
They're usable, but they don't help you when you get out there and you're trying to get behind the gun and you're trying to do long range shots or precision shots or something specific. Get behind the gun quickly. I found that you got to spend some money on a stock once you get to the certain point where you can shoot well. You know, your rifle can shoot well. It's got a good scope on it. You got a good bipod. You know how to shoot, but at some point you have to put a good stock on it in order to get that accuracy out of the system. But now you just go buy these modular chassis guns, including the Ruger Precision Rifle. What we'd like to do, though, is get some feedback from you. If you've got a precision rifle, whether it be if you've used the modular chassis systems, if you've used the Ruger Precision Rifle, if you've used, the Howa or the Savage that comes in the chassis. Maybe you had a bolt gun and you dropped it in a chassis already. You know, maybe you're ahead of the curve. You're one of those hipsters. You know, you had a chassis before it was cool. Let us know your feedback. Jump on facebook.com/gunshowpodcast. You know, send us a message right on our wall. Throw us a hook.
A hook? A line?
That's not a thing. A hook?
And a sinker.
I thought that's what it was. Oh, hook and a sinker, yeah.
A hook and a line.
You know, shoot us a horn blow. Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Give us a ring.
Yeah. Give us a
buzz.
Yeah. I thought about saying that, but then I was like, it's too close to ring. And then I was like,
ring and buzz.
He might think of buzz. And
buzz.
I'll give it to him if he wants to.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyways, we want your feedback. Let us know what you think about these new chassis systems. I think I need to get my hands on one. Now that we talked it up, you know, I didn't want one before, like, we did this. And
I,
now
I kind of
want one.
The industry has changed to that point. It's no longer the quote-unquote old crusty guy who goes out and hunts, you know, to get away from Thanksgiving dinner or lunch or whatever you have. It's now it's becoming more normalized. It's more casual. It's, hey, I want to learn how to shoot 600 yards or... And if you have the money, I want to learn how to shoot 1,000 yards. So I think there's an entire shift change in the market that allows for this type of a platform to excel. And I think that's part of the reason why we see everyone else coming out with it. But Ruger just happened to be the main ones that jumped on it at the right time. And we know that Ruger's marketing arm is amazing. So...
Well, what you're talking about is called Gun Culture 2.0. I don't know.
Yeah.
They've actually, you know, you can. It's a Wikipedia entry somewhere, I think.
I have to believe it. Maybe I should go see if I can add, like, true content.
Well, back in the day, your gun enthusiast came from, like you said, they just grew up with guns. There were guns on the farm. There were guns in the house. They went hunting, so they had guns. You know, maybe they were in the military, so they were into guns. The gun culture back then was not what it is today. Nowadays, you have people coming from video games to guns, right?
I think the big difference in gun culture is that it's not just the hick that lives out in the sticks.
No, it's inclusive.
That's the difference, though. Let me rephrase that. It wasn't always the hick that lived in the sticks that had the guns, but that was what was portrayed, and that's what people believed.
Well, I think a large portion of the gun culture 1.0, or whatever you want to call it, was that. Like I said, it was somebody who grew up with guns in the household. They were from a rural or maybe suburban area, or their parents were, so they were into guns, so they got into guns. But nowadays, like you said, it's more inclusive. It's more like... somebody coming from video games to guns, or somebody coming from, you know, airsoft or paintball to guns. And because I think it's more inclusive, you get more of the different individuals, not different individuals, different types of people buying guns, getting into guns, shopping for guns. I don't know if you've been at a gun store lately, but the redneck browsing around for his next deer rifle isn't who's in the gun stores nowadays. It's everybody, right? It's right. It's a whole cross section of society. And I
need to interrupt you for a second because I did go to one of these large stores over the weekend.
The big box stores?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't say who.
Yeah. Just get bought by Bass Pro Shops?
No. Maybe. I can't say who. It could have been, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. Who knows? That's the mystery that someone may be able to solve. But I went in there and I started talking to the guy behind the counter, which was my first mistake. Yeah. I went in there knowing what they wanted and what they were going to get. And I started just asking a few questions. And one of the things that came up was the Mossberg, the Maverick 88s have a crossbolt safety, which is what Remington puts on their shotguns.
Yeah, they're similar, yeah.
And yeah, it's just a crossbolt. Like, it's not in the same position, same size, but
it's the same thing you had on your Daisy BB gun that you pumped up 10 times.
Safety. Yeah. It's not exactly the same mechanics, you know, all that kind of fun stuff, but it's the same thing. Well, I started asking, I said, well, you know, I really, really prefer shotguns with the Tang safety, even though I am a Remington guy. But I've started really falling in love with the Tang safety because I'm left-handed.
It's just easier for a lefty. It's more like an ambidextrous safety.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I start to, the guy looks at me and he goes, oh, if you want a Tang safety on a shotgun, you'll have to get into a Remington. A Remington. Maybe. And then I said, what do you mean? He said, well, the cost on it's going to be more expensive. And Remington was really the ones that pioneered that.
And I have like three Remington shotguns, and they all have not Tang safeties.
Right, they all have crossbolt. And so I'm looking at the guy, and then I'm looking right past him at the Mossberg 500. That is, you know, $360.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at him. And I go, oh, you mean like a Mossberg 500? And he goes, no, you have to get into a Remington. And I went, okay.
Maybe he was just confused.
I was so confused that I walked off I let him finish. And I just said, get this shotgun. This is what you want. And then I walked off.
We could segue into a whole section talk discussion about the gun counterculture.
Mm.
I don't think the gun counterculture is gun culture 2.0. I think it's something completely different.
It is 2.0.
You think so?
Yeah, it is, because the problem is, and we've talked about this, is everyone that hears something one time or reads, you know, Maxim magazine thinks that's it. That's the end all be all, and this is correct without a doubt. I've read Maxim magazine before, and there was a movie, you know, they do the little sketches and stuff for a movie.
Maxim magazine, that's the one with them pretty girls in it, right? Okay.
That's what it is.
But they're not naked.
No.
They're almost naked.
That's right, Hillbilly Scott. And so one of the little scenes that they had drawn was a hand or a gun firing. Well, what is flying through the air after the gun has fired is a round. The bullet, the casing,
the whole
cartridge, and everything.
Yeah.
And so I'm just kind of, you can't.
We've seen that before in artwork,
yeah,
though.
We see that. But what I'm saying is the gun culture is they think they're right. There's no way of going around it. And I think that gun culture is still 1.0 and 2.0. It's still exactly the same for the people behind the counter.
You know, I find it hard to argue with that. I have gone into, there's a local gun store local to us that I have gone into where there were surprisingly smart, well-versed, open behind the counter. And there was none of that, I don't know what you want to call it, silliness of here's my opinion, it's the way, it's the only way that we see. Now, that is the exception to the rule in my area, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. most places I go, it's just, you know, you hear that sort of thing. You hear someone, and you know what? This is the Dunning-Kruger effect. That's what it is. You know, that's exactly what it is, because I went to one of the big box stores, not the same one you went into. I went to a big box store and I heard the salesman trying to sell the lady, I don't remember what it was. It was a Glock or it was something plastic. Mm-hmm. It was a Glock or something.
Oh, you don't want that.
And the other guy behind the counter was like, you don't want that.
It melts in a hot car.
You want one of them 1911s.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, maybe she wants that.
No, because a 1911's all purdy like, and she's a lady.
No, it won like World Wars. That's the argument.
Oh.
Which isn't wrong. No. I mean, it helped.
Well, you know what I just thought about, too, was the guy handed us the shotgun and said, hey, you know, inspect the shotgun before we purchase it.
Sure.
And I said, well, I want it, because they come in two pieces, right?
Yeah.
I said, you can put it together. I would like to inspect it together to make sure it functions and doesn't bind or anything weird. And the guy goes, well, we can't do that. And I looked at him and I said, well, we're not buying a shotgun. And the guy goes, well, you can do that. I just don't know how to put it together. Now, it's a Mossberg Maverick 88, which is two pieces.
That's
the only thing you need to know about a Mossberg Maverick 88 is when you're taking it apart is that you have to pull the bolt back because it has a little locking lug.
The action has to be open.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's a little locking lug that holds the barrel in place.
Right.
And that's the only thing you need to know. Huh. And when you're putting it together, the action needs to be open, like that you said, or the bolt to the back.
That is interesting. You know,
this is the guy running the NICS check.
I
don't expect everyone to know everything, right? I don't. But when you walk up to the counter and they're like, well, that's our number one selling shotgun for home defense, and this is what everybody's buying. It's like you would think you would be somewhat versed in selling that.
No, I'll tell you what it is. It is.
Tell me, Scott.
It is today's.
Tell me what it is, Scott. Tell me now.
It's two things. It's today's throwaway society, right? The big box store, they can't hire the guy who knows about guns to work at the gun counter. They don't pay enough. He's not going to stay there, right? He's going to move on to something more lucrative money-wise. The other part of it is, just like I said, the Dunning-Kruger effect. Once that guy behind that counter for a year or two, and he thinks he knows shotguns, he spouts off his opinion as if it's fact, as opposed to a real expert who would go, here are some options. Here are some of my observations in life. Here are some of my opinions stated as opinions, and I'll let you make your own decisions, which is what a smart salesman does anyways. You know, they try to figure out what the customer wants, give the customer some options, and then try to talk them into the sale once the customer has picked from those options. I don't understand, like you said, what motivates someone to speak out their opinion as fact. I don't understand that part of it, but I do understand why there's an untrained guy running the gun counter at the big box store. I mean, you'd probably run into the same thing at the the auto parts store or the paint store.
Toilet store. Heck,
I went to a paint store and they told me I needed to do. Let's see, an oil-based finish first, and then let that dry, and then do a water base on top of that.
That's not correct at all.
And I thought to myself,
no part of that is correct.
I thought to myself, one, I was trying to paint a bed, right? It's just a bed,
right? Right.
I thought to myself, one, that's going to cost me $200 in paint before I'm done. Paint and brushes, because you got to buy all new brushes, right? You can't mix and match,
right?
Two, it doesn't sound right. It doesn't pass the smell test. It just doesn't feel right to me. It's like, why would you need two different? Yeah. So I didn't do that. So and so far, so good. But I think that's part of our throwaway society.
Well, I was level 5 certified in the paint department.
Does that mean your opinion was fact?
I wasn't the one giving you that incorrect opinion. First off, that needs to be clearly stated. But, yeah, no, exactly. That's the problem is that, you know, there are options. I worked for a company. Like I said, I was level 5 certified.
Well, did you have level 5 on your name tag? So I would know as a customer?
Absolutely not.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, this is where I was going to go with that, though, is that I actually went and got certified in multiple departments, a bunch, right? I got in trouble for it. Being certified in multiple departments.
Yeah.
And then I also got in trouble for being certified in my department too high.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, that's how I felt. You know, when you're 18 years old and you're trying to, you know, make yourself a little better off or do something extra, and you kind of get your hand slapped for it, it's keeping everyone dumbed down.
Then that is a problem with the whole management staff or wherever you were working, or even their corporation. I don't know. I didn't work
there. I don't know.
But it's almost political.
I apologize.
It's not isolated, though. We see this all the time.
No, it's not. And that's what I mean, is it's everywhere. Yeah.
If you've got one of these gun store, gun counter stories, we'd like to hear it. Go to Gun Show Podcast.
Right.
No, wait. Yeah, no. Go to Facebook.com/Gun Show Podcast. Go, you know what? Just type Gun Show Podcast in the search.
If you have the time and you want to record a message and you want to actually tell it to us, give it to us, send it in, and maybe we'll actually play it live. Or not live, but your voice.
Can we do this live?
We could do this live via Facebook Live. People would get that annoying Facebook Live notification and then they'd unfollow us. So. I don't really know.
Is that how that works? Yeah. I just want to see the likes float by on the screen.
If you click it a whole bunch of times,
yeah,
you can see a bunch of likes. So maybe we could just do our own. We just keep clicking. Yeah.
Nobody has to listen to us while it's live.
Ask our friends and families and just start clicking it. It's like all red comments were while this was live. All black are post. And it's like, oh, man, let's be popular. Let's just have random people.
Random people clicking like. Yeah, Can we pay them for that?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I can't. You might be able to afford it.
No, I got to buy shotguns.
Let's kind of delve into a little bit of confusion that you and I have had recently.
Yeah.
About, we're pretty much strictly talking about just 9mm and the pricing structure here.
Yeah.
So don't go telling us that's actually 29 cents or that's, you know, because we're not talking about 40. We're not talking about 45.
Right.
We're not talking about 223. We're just talking about 9mm.
And that's because I shoot 9mm. I buy lots of 9mm. So I kind of know the 9mm pricing structure of about what's available out there.
But we also have to have a standard.
Yeah, and you got to start somewhere.
This show would be 8 hours long if we tried to go through all of the different pricing structures for each one of these different
types of ammo. Plus, let's face it, if you're not using 9mm, you're probably wrong, right?
Oh, my gosh. All comments that are Scott's or Scott's comments alone.
And do not reflect the comments of...
Do not reflect the views...
The Gun Show Podcast.
Of the Gun Show Podcast. All right, so what we've noticed is that... American Eagle Syntech, which is a lead bullet with a bacon coating
in
brass case.
We've talked about this before.
Right.
The Syntech is basically, for a while back, the bacon coatings on the lead cast bullets became popular with the do-it-yourself crowd. Guys were doing it themselves in their little ovens at home and their wife's oven and the toaster oven that they didn't tell their wife about. You know, because it was so inexpensive and you were able to push these bullets to higher velocities, and it just became like, why not? It was cheap. And then that kind of segued into companies offering. There's a company called like Blue Bullets or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And there's a bunch of other companies that have all sorts of different colors. You can Google that stuff. Where you can buy it just dirt cheap, way cheaper than even some lead round nose, but way cheaper than, you know, your traditional jacketed bullets. And you can load them cheap and make cheap plinking ammo or competition ammo or whatever with these bullets. And then Federal came out and said, we're going to do it. We're going to put that bullet in a loaded ammunition. And we're going to put it in an American Eagle box?
American Eagle
box. And we're going to market it to to everybody. Not just hand loaders.
Right. So that is a lead bullet with a bacon coating in a brass case. And that's about 24 cents a round.
Yeah.
Winchester Forge is Winchester's steel case.
Mm-hmm.
So you get
But it's got a traditional copper jacketed bullet.
Right.
Yes.
You get a traditional bullet in it, but you get a steel case to cut down on the cost. And then...
Well, everybody knows steel-cased, steel-jacketed ammo from Russia and Romania... And that's the cheap stuff. If you just want a ammo that'll go bang
almost all the time, you
go buy that stuff.
You still get good powder in this, too.
Yeah.
You know, not the cleanest, not the best, but you still get better powder than what you get from the cheap stuff from Russia.
Yeah, so Winchester came out with this stuff. And Winchester's idea was the problem is the steel jacketed on the cheap steel-cased ammo is keeping people from using it in as many places as they can because you have a steel projectile going down range, and ranges don't like that. So they're going to offer the Winchester Forged, which, like you said, is that steel case, standard copper jacketed ammo. It's going for what? Right now it's going for like 20 cents a round.
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah. Here's my problem with both of these items, and maybe I'm missing the point because, let's face it, I buy on price. You know, as long as it's 9mm, it goes bang and goes down range, I'll buy it and put it in my gun, right? This stuff is not as cheap as I think it would be for the... These are supposed to be cheaper options.
Yeah, cost savings.
Like cost-saving options, right? But like you said, we're running 24 cents a round right now for Syntec. We're running 20 cents a round right now for Winchester Forge. And if I shop around, I can find brass case, copper jacketed ammo for what I put down.
18 cents a round.
18 cents a round today. So I did all these comparisons today. So we kind of get an apples to apples comparison.
And the cheapest steel at, yeah, 16 cents a round.
16 cents a round. That means I can buy steel cased ammo. Now, it does have a steel jacketed projectile, yes. But we're talking a savings of 4 cents
usually
a round.
Usually it's a bimetal steel jacket.
Yeah, bimetal.
We don't need anyone always going out there saying that it's all steel.
Yeah. So what is that?
It penetrates M1 Abrams because it's steel, and it's actually a penetrating round.
Steel core penetrating, yeah, armor-piercing ammo. No, that's not what this is. It's just a thin steel jacket around a lead core. The same stuff, you know, you've been buying from Mother Russia for years. I don't know. What is that? What is that price difference?
I would tell you this. If I was shooting, uh-huh, on, and I had my own land and I was out, sure, shooting, I wouldn't mind shooting the steel out there because, yeah, A, it would be cheapest and it would, and I would allow it. But I could also use a magnet to quickly police my brass.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But here's one of the things.
But it's 80% of the price of the quote-unquote, well, cheaper stuff from the big-name brand,
here's
right?
What I was about to say, though, is, yeah, that the brass, yeah, if you have any desire to either resell it or sell it to someone
hand load,
yeah, it's
night
value
and day
is,
comparison, yeah, yeah.
I mean, because how many times can you safely reload brass? It's like, what, 3-4 times usually?
If you're doing a powder puff load and you're putting back in the same gun, some guys get like 10 hand loads out of them before they start seeing cracks.
Right. So, I mean, you're looking at possibly 10 loads, yeah, and that's savings on that is astronomical, right? Because,
right,
all you got to do is have the powder, the primer, and a bullet.
Yep.
And then you start saving yourself plenty,
yeah,
of money.
Yeah, you could probably reload for, you know, 11 cents a round all day long if you count your time as, you know, free.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you asked me the question, and I wrote this down. You said, is the market just saturated? Mm-hmm. Or is this a great strategy to market on a premium brand name?
See, that's the part I can't figure. Because I shop on price, you know. I understand that Aguila or what did I buy last time? Fiocchi, or the time before that, I bought like SMB, Cellier and Below.
Right.
I understand that these are perfectly fine plinking ammos. And if I'm shooting a lot of rounds, but I still want some brass case, these are the perfect choices. Because at 18 cents a round, I can't reload cheaper than that because my time is worth money. But you know, some people can, but it just doesn't make sense to me to shoot anything else.
It's a hobby.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
I'm going to
get
into it one of these days. I mean, I just need to, you know, make some time.
Just need to get older and crustier.
Retire. Yeah. No. But so I don't understand this ammo. So
I think it is. It's part of that. It goes back to, yeah, gun culture 2.0/1.0, where,
yeah,
someone comes to you and they say, oh no, by no means should you ever fire anything other than Federal or American Eagle through that gun.
Oh, and I see what you mean.
And all of a sudden, yeah, what do you have? Well, heck, the only thing that's available is American Eagle Syntec. And the guy told me when I bought the gun, if I fire anything other than American Eagle, then it's probably going to jam on me.
I
hear that so many times. I talk to,
yeah,
people, and you're talking to them about high brass, low brass. You're talking about different size shells. And you just have these mind-numbing conversations at certain stores. Well, any store can have that with a certain individual,
yeah,
is the way to say it.
Well, here's
but
the thing.
But they're telling you,
yeah,
that this is it. This is gospel. It's written in stone. And if you try to change this, then all you're going to do is run into problems. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
I can understand I want to buy American, or I trust this brand of ammo. I can understand that. You know, maybe you haven't been shooting long. You haven't been paying attention. You don't understand what Aguila or SMB or Fiocchi is. But if you flip over the box, if you flip over the box of Fiocchi, well, that's harder to say than you'd think.
Flip over a box of
Fiocchi. It says right on it, made in the USA.
Right.
Fiocchi's made in the USA now. The Winchester, depending on what box you pick up, may be made somewhere else. I know, I've seen Taiwan, I've seen USA, I've seen Israel.
Some Mexico stuff. I don't know if it was Winchester. Mexico? Yeah, I thought Winchester? It was.
Aguila's Mexico.
That's
for
what
sure.
It was, probably. Yeah, that's what I was seeing.
So I could understand wanting to stick with a made in USA or a name brand you trust, but I, like I said, I've shot thousands of rounds of, you know, SMB, Fiocchi.
Let's start a trend where you can only shoot ammo that comes from the manufacturer of the gun. Done.
See, I would agree with that, except I shot that SIG.
You'd only be able to shoot SIG. No,
I
but
shot the
you can only
V-Crown
shoot SIG
stuff. Not the V-Crown, their full metal jacket stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really expensive. It's
but
way
that,
more
no,
expensive.
No, but that's what
than
I'm saying. Let's start
and it's
it.
It's just a full metal jacket.
Let's see if we can start that trend.
Yeah.
Where people are like, oh, I have to buy Colt ammo. I have to buy Remington
Colt ammo.
I have to buy Beretta ammo. I have to buy, you know.
Beretta ammo. Does Beretta have ammo?
Ruger? No.
Beretta's
but that
missing
frees
out
up ammo for all
Ruger,
of us.
Ruger has ammo. Yeah.
But that's should what I mean. You
I'm
tell them that, and then all of a sudden, so Winchester guys can shoot the Winchester, yeah, but, you know.
So wait, if I have a 308 Winchester made by Savage, can I shoot Winchester in it?
No, it'll explode.
I'm confused. What if I have a 308 Savage by Remington? Wait, is that a thing? 300 Savage?
It doesn't really matter. Because if it's not marked Savage on the box that you buy the ammo, it doesn't work.
You know where,
let's start that.
You know where your logic fails and completely goes off the rails and bursts in the fire and dies, right?
Tell me.
Glock.
Why?
Glock doesn't make ammo.
I don't know what your problem is. All right, I don't get it. Am I confusing you? Are you confused at what I'm saying?
Where am I going to get Glock ammo from?
I'm saying we start this and there's more ammo for us, the people that know the truth.
Oh.
And we just let that perpetuate and spread through the universe, and then all of a sudden we start going in and there's plenty of ammo. You can't buy it just
on
the caliber.
Does CMMG have ammo?
I think so. But it's okay. That's fine. We'll let them buy that CMMG ammo. You're missing the point.
Is this a hashtag thing?
This is the big picture. Maybe it's a hashtag big picture.
Oh, if it's a hashtag, I'm in. If
now
I don't actually have to do anything and I could just hashtag it, I am so in.
Okay, let me say this. Hashtag more ammo. Hashtag laughable situations.
Laughable situations.
Hashtag gun show podcast.
Laughable situations, gun show podcast.
Yeah.
For sure. Speaking of Glocks, I bought one. I finally bought the Glock 43. Finally. It took me way too long to get off my lazy butt on a Saturday, drive across town to the guy who's got Glock 43s for law enforcement military pricing, and purchase one at a ridiculous... These things are so cheap.
So the Glock 43 is a 9mm compact, basically a pocket
super
gun.
Compact. Yeah. They call it a slim frame? What do they call it? Slim. I don't know. It's a single stack. It's a slim frame.
SPF, slim pocket frame?
Yeah. One thing I noticed, because I switched from a car... PM9.
Which, by the way, SPF is not a real thing, so please do not go out there saying that you heard it on the Gun Show podcast. Slim pocket frame has now been trademarked and hashtagged by the Gun Show podcast. We own it. We own you.
We should, like, end on that note. I don't even know what more we could say at this point. I'm good. No, but, so I switched from a car PM9 to a Glock G43, which are both 9mm, both subcompact, tiny little single-stack guns, but there's some big differences in them, and I just wanted to share them with everybody in case someone else was kind of in the position I was. One of the biggest differences, the Glock 43 is a Glock. It shoots like a Glock, has Glock trigger, has Glock sights. Feels very Glockish. It does all the Glock things, right? The other thing was it's way longer in overall length than the car that I'm getting out of and getting into this Glock. The interesting thing I found was it's the exact same height, and I have some pictures, and I'll probably put them up on our Facebook page when I remember. The CAR PM9 and the Glock 43 are almost exact same height. They're just as tall as one another. However, because of the Glock's design, it has more grip on it. It has more handle. There's more to grab onto, which was very surprising and a very positive thing. Because when I pocket carry, right? So I go in my pocket, I grip my gun. I have more grip. I have a firmer grip. I have a better grip. I don't know how to describe it. But I got more gription on my gun because there's more handle sticking out for the amount of height that I've got on the gun. And I thought that was quite interesting. The other part I really, really liked was the trigger between the PM9 and the Glock. It's just night and day. The PM9 doesn't have a bad trigger. It just doesn't have a Glock trigger.
Well, yeah.
And I'm used to Glocks. Glock 19 is one of my favoriteest things ever. So, you know, I like Glocks. I like shooting Glocks. You know, I'm a Glock armorer, so I know how to take it apart and put it back together. So, yeah, I'm really happy with this purchase. I think it could be better. I think I would like the Glock if it was, you know, maybe a quarter or half inch shorter in overall length, maybe closer to the PM9 in overall length. But I really like the Glock. I think it conceals well. I think it shoots well. I've had a lot of rounds through mine. No malfunctions, of course, you know, because it's a Glock. You know, I'm really happy with the decision to switch to a Glock for my my little pocket carry gun.
Well, for our our last story.
Yeah.
Because you just went on and on about your infatuation with your new Glock that I haven't even seen. But anyway, speaking of old and crusty, I see it.
Okay.
Speaking of old and crusty, let's talk about how Colt has finally come to Gun 2.0 with their mid-link.
Yeah, I don't know if that Gun 2.0. That might be earlier. That might be Gun, I don't know, Gun 1.1? Yeah, the Colt just announced a mid-length.
Oh, Scott.
What?
Hold on a second.
Wait.
I think you should take this Glock back.
Why?
Because the mag doesn't just drop free.
What do you mean it doesn't just drop
free? It doesn't drop free. So that means it's one of those European guns?
I think it drops free.
No, it's a No.
Pretty sure it drops free.
No, it doesn't. Look, it's... Look, I pulled it out. So,
I don't think you did it right. Did you push the button with your thumb while shooting?
In America,
yes.
Our magazines drop free.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know that over in Europe, because they're afraid of losing magazines, they don't allow their magazines to drop free. And I understand that. I get that. By the way, I've heard that before.
Really?
Yes. That's why I'm saying it. No, your Glock is beautiful.
It's a Glock. It needs some sights. I need to order some sights. I just need to get around to that. Maybe some excess sights. We'll see.
Hey, Scott, off your Glock. Yeah. Back to Colt.
Oh, sorry. Colt announced they're joining the rest of us with a mid-length option for their rifles. I don't know what the numbers are going to be. I'm not sure. You can probably click on that link and see if they give us some numbers. But, you know, Colt had a 300 blackout at SHOT Show. I don't remember seeing a mid-length. But, yeah, so Colt's talking about a mid-length.
Suggested retail price on it is about $1,300. So Colt,
it should be
Colt, you know, value pricing.
$6,920 should be about $1,000 street price when we get down to it. I'm just curious what configurations it'll be. The news stories were showing like free float tubes, which isn't
right.
That's
not
a Colt thing. That's a Colt.
Also, looks like it's coming with Magpul stock. I don't know.
Yeah, there are Magpul versions right now. You can buy a Colt 6920. Mo with all the Magpul stuff.
Right.
You can buy a Colt 6920 Mo SL with all the Mo SL stuff, which is showing in the pictures here. So, you know, the free float tube's kind of throwing me, but, you know, maybe that's the configuration they'll sell it in. Like I said, I'll guess I'll wait till we
sale. In this picture, and what is listed is an M-Lock compatible Centurion CMR free float handguard is actually the standard.
Yeah, that makes sense. But a Centurion CMR on a factory Colt, man. I'll believe it when I see it.
You know what? This
that's a really good rail system.
And the safety is ambi. It's an ambi safety, too.
Well, they've had that for a minute, too. So,
a lot of people have, but it's not standard.
No, Colt. Yeah, Colt's been putting those on some of their standard.
Well, I guess
rifles.
It's standard for Colt then.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends what model you get.
Well,
Colt
okay,
has so many
it's
numbers.
Not standard. It's not something that they put across their entire line. That's what I mean. When you tell me something is standard, that means pretty much their entire line has that.
I mean,
so if you come to me and you say, "Hey, for Remington, crossbolt safeties on their shotgun is standard," you go, "Oh, okay." Like, because it's across their line.
Yeah.
If you come to me and you were to come to me and you were to say, "Hey, for Mossberg, crossbolts are standard," you're like, "No, it's not," because
more like an offering then instead of standard. Would that be better? It'd be like saying Colt's now shipping guns with emboss sights, and I say, "Well, Colt's been doing that for a minute, you know."
Yeah, I could.
Colt's had PMags.
Okay.
Been shipping their guns with PMags.
I could allow
for
that
for a minute.
I understand.
Not standard, but an offering. It's like their twist rate. You know, I could say, you know, because I'm used to seeing just Colt 6920s rolling out, I could say that a 16-inch with a 1-7 twist and the M4 grenade launcher cut in it are kind of standard, but they're not really standard because you could get other configurations, but that's pretty much all I've seen Colt come out with. I think Colt's really busy. One, either declaring bankruptcy, I mean, coming back from declaring bankruptcy, you know, reorganizing, or they've got big contracts to fill, so they're not really paying attention. But I would be happy to see a Colt in a mid-length. Now, here's the question. I have mid-length rifles. I like mid-length. I think mid-length is better than a carbine gas system for anything from a 14-ish out to a 16-ish, right? Anything longer than that, you can go rifle. I think that would be better. Anything shorter than that, you probably need to go with a carbine system. But is it that much better? You know what I mean? We talk about, you know, 4150 steel. 4150 steel is definitely a better barrel steel than 4140. Considering, you know, all else being equal, the hardening process, the inspection process, where it came from. But is it that much better? I mean, if you had a gun with a 4140 barrel, would it last, you know, I don't know, 50% longer?
The problem
100%
is,
100% longer?
Most of us will never shoot a barrel out.
I think I may have, but
no, I said most
to that
of us.
Later.
Scott, Scott, you're not most of us, I guess.
I know,
okay?
I know, but you know, I was at the range, I was trying to shoot tiny little groups with my gun, and it wouldn't shoot tiny little groups anymore, and I thought it was me, I thought it was my scope, I thought it was the free float tube, I thought it was the trigger. Turns out it was none of those things, because I eliminated all those variables, so I might have shot out that barrel.
Could be age, did you? I see.
That gun may not have ever shot tiny little groups. I never tried to shoot tiny little groups with that gun before. I shot targets far away that were rather small.
Right. But you never tried to group them far away.
Yeah, I've never been big on paper, but, you know, I was kind of messing around with the range or shooting other guns for tiny little groups. So I thought, why not shoot my gun with tiny little groups?
I'm not going to shoot a barrel out, most likely.
No.
Not in the current...
I never thought I would,
you know,
I'll be honest with you.
Not in the current situation that we have right now.
I never thought I would shoot out a barrel, but... Hey, maybe I did. Hey, maybe this thing never did hold a group. Who knows?
Maybe you never held a group. Maybe,
no,
like,
I did.
The stars have always perfectly aligned in the core.
No, because I shot two other guns that day, and I shot tiny little bug hole groups.
Maybe it kept throwing them.
With the same scope.
It threw them into the right spot for you. Like, maybe that's just...
I don't think so. I don't think it did, because... No. These were 5-round groups. I mean, they weren't 10-round groups. I wouldn't brag about these groups, but
they were
5-round groups.
Sounds like you are.
I'm not showing you a picture. Well, look at my group.
I can tell
look
you,
at my group. I'm going to take a picture of it.
I shot
on
two other guns, small groups.
You know what? I'm putting this on Instagram then.
How do I know that? How do I know that? I know that because you just bragged about it.
Well, no, but...